WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary and Lisa Nichols with you until 9 o'clock tonight. Maybe Shay Spillane, we'll see, sitting in traffic. Maybe she joins us. Hopefully she gets here. I don't know.
I'm sure she'll get here.
We'll find out. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-WMFO. Dial those numbers into your phone. Prepare to get outraged over the anti-diversity screed published by a Google engineer. It's anti-diversity, Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
It's as anti-diversity as they come. Never mind that the opening line says, I support diversity.
Right.
It's an anti-diversity screed.
Exactly.
People on the internet told me to think that.
Yes.
So we'll take a look at that.
Screaming children, they're at it again.
And what it has to say, oh, we'll be hearing a lot about the screaming children on the internet tonight and the problems that they are causing of all shapes and stripes and sizes. Throughout this great nation of ours.
Always.
Yeah.
It never stops.
And hopefully the screaming back pain won't completely destroy me.
You know what? I'm not even going to ask you how you're doing because I know how you're doing.
This has been going on since Easter. I just haven't healed from this thing, you know? And it's,
because you don't stop.
I can't.
I
don't have a choice. It's not like I can go lay down somewhere
word,
for a week.
I know that word, day off and vacation, are completely voided from
don't
your
get
vocabulary.
Them. You come work in my office. We don't get those. Mm-hmm. I don't get those. Those things don't exist in my work.
You can. You just don't.
No. It's not that I can. I can't.
You choose.
When I say I can't take time off, I mean I can't take time off because I will take a day off, I will come back, all my clients will be gone, and I won't have a job anymore.
All right.
That's the reality of my life.
But you know what? You can deal with your clients from the comforts of your house while mending your aching back.
No, I can't even
with
do
ice.
I can't even do that because it just doesn't.
You know what you need? You need those little heating pads that you stick to your back.
Yeah.
Maybe that will help.
No, it doesn't because those are designed to deal with like surface level pain. Mm-hmm. I've got a nerve inside my spine that is continually
that
getting
is not happy.
Pinched. Yeah. You know what actually does work? I discovered this today. The CBD oil. That's good stuff. Hempzilla.
Is that...
Might be available at a gas station near you.
Oh, I was going to say, is that the medical marijuana?
Yeah, well,
that's actually what
not,
you need.
It's not because it's just CBD oil. That's mm-hmm. all it is. And a friend of mine who also has back trouble recommended it to me, got me some. And I took it this morning and I was like, it doesn't completely make the pain go away.
Now, what do you just rub it on your back?
No, you drink it. It's a shot. It doesn't completely make the pain go away, but boy damn, does it
you feel good.
Push it down. No, you don't get, you don't feel anything mentally from it. You don't
okay.
feel high. You don't feel anything like that. The pain just goes away. The pain just gets damped right down. And I was like, okay, other than the time I had to bend over and tie my shoe this morning, I was fine. So,
now, did you do this in conjunction of using ibuprofen or?
No.
Because I know you're very much against that. Multiple times during your pain, I've had to force you to take pain medicine.
Yeah, no.
Because you're a man.
The only thing is, well, I don't take anything to begin with. I don't take anything at all. When I had the oral surgery and the abscess in my throat and the rest of that, I took the high strength ibuprofen and that was it. Like mm-hmm. 2 days later, I'm pretty much good to go. You know, my body is back up to like, yeah, let's fight that pain, forget about it, move on.
Is that what it's like?
I was taking a leave the first time the back flared up when I still had the hamstring thing going and the screaming pain in my quadriceps. But that stuff makes me so jittery, and it also elevates your risk for a heart attack, which at my age and with my lack of physical activity
is not
a situation I want to walk
ideal.
Into
mm-hmm.
if there's any possible way of avoiding it. So, and for all the good it does, you know,
So the lesson we learn, kids, is getting old is not fun.
No, and I'll say this, the Aleve maybe took the pain down by like 15-20%. Enough that it's not crippling, but you're still aware of it constantly.
Mm-hmm.
The CBD oil is like 70%.
All right.
You're still aware that there's something wrong back there, but...
Still think you need that strong stuff.
Yeah. So I'm waiting for the dispensaries to open up around here so that I can get my hands on some of that sweet, sweet CBD oil.
Mary Jane.
Yeah, it works.
It does.
It works. Good stuff and does not get you high. So don't think I'm broadcasting under the... I took it this morning anyway, so... Might have worn off by now. I'm angry at the world.
I was going to say, once you enter this radio station, it's just that red that fills your face.
Yeah.
It's either from my angry comments or things that you read.
I'm angry at everything right now, so I don't think it's having any sort of psychological effect on me.
Oh, good.
At least not one that my friends and listeners would appreciate.
Perfect. So. Ideal situation for the show.
And we don't have Shay. Did I mention we don't have Shay? Yeah. So we're going to wing it in local news. Massachusetts Representative Nikki Tsongas announced this afternoon that she will not seek re-election in 28, and that has set off a scramble to fill her seat. Among the names who may be throwing their hats into the ring include Daniel Coe, Chief of Staff for Mayor Marty Walsh, Salvatore Lupoli, the founder of Sal's Pizza, and others including the former mayor of Lowell. So there you go.
I'll say right now, if you are for having a pizza slice 1/4 the size of a pizza, then Sal. Yes, you have my vote.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this expected, or is I thought that she was going to go again once again? For re-election.
Two other names that are in the list for this are Lancaster Democrat Steve Kerrigan and State Senator Eileen Donahue, who is sort of an early front runner in this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
No, this came completely out of the blue.
No, that's what I'm saying. I expected her to run once again.
Yeah.
And as she said, she has, quote, I've learned life lessons, that there's times for endings and new beginnings. As for much thought, I've decided this is one of those times. So really didn't get into the reasonings behind it. I'm assuming family, politics.
She's 71.
Yeah.
And may just be at that, you know, she didn't give any real reason for it. She's in good health as far as we know.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, she's going to continue to be active in politics in Massachusetts. She's a Tsongas. She doesn't have a choice. You know, if she wants to avoid politics, she's going to have to go move to one of those Canadian maritime islands and then maybe people will leave her alone. But she may just, you know, she may just feel that she's done what she set out to do or that enough is enough or whatever it is. So this is a big deal because the state Republican Party is completely off guard and completely unprepared to field a candidate. The state Democratic Party has been circling around possibilities of who do we run against Governor Baker.
Mm-hmm.
And possibilities of somebody like Seth Moulton maybe stepping up and challenging Elizabeth Warren for the United States Senate.
Bye.
So they're really, it's going to be a Democrat. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
But the Democrats are a little bit flat-footed in the response to this. I'll guarantee you who is going to throw her hat in the ring if she can figure out a way to get residency up there is the former Attorney General Martha Coakley.
Of course.
Martha will not go away. There's no way that Martha's going to go away.
I told you, she comes into my restaurant a lot. And,
yeah.
I fake nice.
You know what?
For her.
I actually...
She's a sweet woman.
I like Martha. I've met Martha. Martha's great as a human being. Did I disagree with some of the things she did as AG? Absolutely.
Derek, how many times have I said that this person is a great human being, but is completely off... putting with their politics. I can go down the list. Deval Patrick, perfect example. And I'm only saying a good person in the sense of was cordial to me, but, you know, he was okay with children dying all over Massachusetts.
Yeah.
But I digress. The scene in Massachusetts, I think we're going through a huge transition. As you said, we're coming into another election year. And that... with politics right now and so many people are against what's going on with the Trump administration in Washington. So many times we've said on the show, you need to tell your state reps, you need to tell the people that you put into office. I think there's going to be more of a focus on these smaller elections, where I think in the past few years they've kind of gone astray, where people don't really bother going out to the polls for these smaller elections. And I do think it's going to garner a little more importance with this coming. Again, Republicans really don't have a candidate in mind. There's a few people, you spouted off a few names that are trying to put their name in the ring. I think it's going to take a few months to get established and actually start a full-blown campaign for a single candidate.
Well, you've got the regular campaign cycle, so we know that the election, it's not like there's going to be a special election. She's not walking away tomorrow. So everybody's got until the end of the year to sort of get their ducks in a row.
Because we're talking about November of next year.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So this will be a usual. There will probably be a primary in September and then election day in November. So this will be a regular congressional election for us. The question becomes who runs and who's got the ambition.
So Baker's up for re-election. He said he's going to
Oh, yeah. Baker's going to win.
I don't know.
He's mediocre and inoffensive.
That's actually a perfect way to put it.
Which is why his approval numbers are through the roof.
He's so, Switzerland.
Yeah, he's mediocre and inoffensive.
But here's the thing.
Things here aren't that bad.
And I do say it to any state representative that has possibility of a state representative and you're going to run. Just like any election, if you are talking to your constituents or if you're talking to the people...
Nobody talks to their constituents.
If you're
That's
talking...
That's how you get in trouble. Don't talk to the
people of your community, follow through with your promises. I'm not saying that, yeah, in the first 90 days you need to complete off the laundry list of things that you're going to do. But, I mean, look at number one case that Charlie Baker ran on was to fix DCF and the situation that Massachusetts had coming out of Deval Patrick's administration. I mean, that's one of the most basic things where you can completely gut a system and change it around.
Right. But
what?
But
continually,
this is,
every other week we're talking about on the show, another kid falls through the cracks, another kid falls through the cracks. Oh, another kid dead.
This is a Massachusetts congressional seat. All you got to do is show up and say, I hate the Republicans.
Our representatives pretty much do nothing.
Let people marry their furniture. I'm in favor of everybody getting an abortion and everybody running wild and free, and you're going to get elected. Mm-hmm. As long as there is a D next to your name. If there's an R next to your name, you're not going to get elected. Don't even bother running. But if you insist, if you have friends with money that they want to throw away, possibly for tax reasons, and you insist on running as a Republican in that district, which is the dumbest idea ever, you're going to have to come up with some ideas and put something on the table. And when you get down to Washington, you're going to discover that you can't do any of that because Mitch McConnell is still hanging around and
won't let
any legislation advance.
As you just said, if you have a D next to your name, you're automatically going to get the vote. So it's completely, not that it's completely useless, but it's almost hits this fallacy with the election that Massachusetts is so set in their ways that we completely bleed blue and aren't open to any new ideas.
In Massachusetts,
because crazy new ideas are extreme right wing. That's what it is. That's the mentality in Massachusetts.
In Massachusetts, the only letter better than a D to have next to your name is an I. If you have either one of those letters and the I is better than the D, I meaning incumbent, either one of those letters next to your name, you're going to win.
Mm-hmm.
Guaranteed. Welcome to Massachusetts. In national news, FBI agents raided a home of President Donald Trump's former campaign chairman Paul Manafort last month, according to CNN. The agents seized materials in Manafort's home as part of the ongoing Russia investigation, led by Justice Department Special Counsel Robert Mueller. Quote, FBI agents executed a search warrant at one of Mr. Manafort's residences. Mr. Manafort has consistently cooperated with law enforcement and other serious inquiries and did so on this occasion as well, end quote, said Jason Maloney, a spokesman for Paul Manafort. He declined to provide further details. The so-called no-knock warrant, which was first reported by the Washington Post, was served at Manafort's home in Washington's Northern Virginia suburbs on July 26th, the day after Manafort met with Senate Intelligence Committee investigators.
The drama continues.
I got to ask why. I got to ask why, because Paul Manafort has been cooperative. There has been no evidence. He's handed over anything that they've asked him for. There doesn't seem to be any evidence in the reporting that we've seen so far that he's hiding anything or that anybody else is hiding anything. But here comes Robert Mueller with the FBI, and we're going to kick down the door and take your stuff. I don't get it. Unless somebody is saying something that severely contradicts what Mr. Manafort has been saying.
But you don't think that it's this constant witch hunt for the Russia probe, Russia bad, Putin trying to get in on the election, and that whole narrative that is continually being pushed by mainstream media that is being integrated into Washington. Therefore, every single investigation bureau or investigator in Washington is dealing with.
No, I think that may be where it started. That may be the reason why Robert Mueller was hired, was to keep that thing going. But Mueller is his own man, and he's going to go off on his own and do what he needs to do in this situation. One of the theories on this is that Mueller is investigating something completely unrelated to Trump, Russians, election.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to get some leverage over Paul Manafort in the hope that, hey, if we discover some financial impropriety unrelated to everything else,
you help me, I'll hide this.
And you turn state's evidence, oh, we'll make that other thing go away. That's the only thing that makes sense in this case. You know, because there doesn't, and this brings you to an interesting question. If they did find something out illegal about Paul Manafort's finances, and the Trump administration didn't collude with the Russians, mm-hmm. then what good is it?
No, and you know what, Derek? I want to believe that's actually the reason. I mean, I don't want to believe that the FBI is trying to use leverage against Paul Manafort and for this, you know, bigger scheme that's going on. I do want to believe that the Federal Bureau of Investigation is actually investigating some sort of collusion or misrepresentation by these people.
No, they're investigating Manafort. And once that investigation opens, a special counsel can go down any avenue that he chooses, anything that you find.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but when you're talking about somebody that has complete transparency.
So let's say they're investigating Lisa Nichols, mm-hmm. right? And they're investigating Lisa Nichols on the suspicion of routinely supplying fake news to the American people via this radio program.
Yes.
Okay, which you do.
Of course.
So you're sitting there thinking, oh, they're just here for the fake news investigation. Fine. I don't do fake news. Here, have all the information you want. Here's all my notes. Here's my laptop. Go to it.
I have nothing to hide.
And then in the middle of it, they're like, hey, wait, Lisa Nichols is a gun owner. Let's see if she has any unregistered guns. And they execute a search warrant and they find one.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're going to turn around and they're going to be like, you're going to jail for your unregistered gun that we found when we started investigating you, unless you help us build a case against your moronic co-host, who we know is a tool of Putin spreading yes. fake news to the American people.
So exactly what I just said in my first statement in saying it seems like they are trying to follow this narrative that there is always something there, that they are going to go down every avenue.
But it's not Russia. That's the important distinction, and that's okay. where I think you're a little vague.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't necessarily Russia-related. There are two possibilities here. Number one...
Do you believe that they actually think that they have something, that they're using this as a smokescreen for another investigation, or they're just hoping that something pops out of a box and they can get them on something else that actually doesn't have to do with Russia?
There are two possibilities here. One is that somebody else who they've investigated has given them concrete evidence tying Manafort to the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
And they know Manafort is lying. So they're going to go get all his stuff and they're going to prove that. Number two, somebody dug up something that doesn't look right. Somebody dug up something completely unrelated to the Russia investigation and said, wait a minute, we can nail this guy on this. If you're an investigator, if you're a former like head of the FBI, if you're Robert Mueller, and somebody gives you leverage over a witness, you're going to take that. You're going to go down that road.
Of course.
And this may have to do with some, you know, banking transaction that took place 20 years ago or 10 years ago.
But what it equates to is jail time.
Yeah,
and if you're, nobody wants to go to jail.
If you're evading taxes, if you're doing business with someone you shouldn't do business with, if you're laundering money, any of those things, you're going to jail. And that's the kind of crime. And Manafort is the kind of suspect slash witness where if you walk in and say, how does 20 years in the federal penitentiary sound? The guy's probably going to sing like a bird.
Exactly.
And this is the big if in the whole thing, he has something to sing about. And we don't know that he does.
Now, just to give the viewers and myself a little more background on Manafort, to remind me, he was a businessman previous to being within the Trump administration.
He was Donald Trump's campaign manager for a while there. And he was in the office during the infamous meeting with the Russian lawyer.
Yes.
Who promised damaging information on Hillary Clinton and then made a lot of noise about overturning some sanctions.
And as we've talked about before, pretty much every single person in the Trump administration has had some sort of relations around the globe, business relations, should I say, because you're dealing with mostly people with a business background.
These are big business people. The economy is global. Of course they have international connections.
It's very likely that there are money transactions, hoping that they're all valid.
And that's the question is, you know, if there's anything illegal there, Paul Manafort's
going to
worry about.
Because that actually does not happen here in the United States. Every single business person, especially, you know, all those one percenters, they're playing by the rules.
Yeah.
All of them.
So we'll see what happens with that. For those of you thinking, oh, this is it. They got Trump finally. No, they don't have anything. They're something about Manafort has caught their attention. We will find out what it is. In world news, sources in the U.S. intelligence community revealed that they believe North Korea has successfully miniaturized a nuclear warhead, making it capable of fitting on one of its intercontinental ballistic missiles and raising the stakes in the dangerous game of saber-rattling conducted by President Kim Jong-un. Intelligence sources say they don't know if the warhead will work, but stress that it is only a matter of time before North Korea tests it. President Donald Trump reacted to the news and new threats from North Korea over United Nations sanctions on Tuesday, saying, quote, they will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen, end quote.
That is a quote that you've only been hearing on the news all day today. Fire and fury. Everybody's angry. North Korea, South Korea. You know, the message seems clear. The United States is determined to keep North Korea from crossing certain thresholds, and it appears Trump and we are willing to do whatever it takes to achieve that goal. Now, amid all this urgency, the critical question, I think, remains largely unanswered. It's just what North Korean nuclear capability is the United States prepared to deal with? There's so many times where, again, we've discussed, is it cage rattling? What are the actual outcomes? Could this happen? Could they? We're hearing more and more and more. Now they can reach Alaska. They can reach Seattle. They can reach D.C.
But
that's a question that is not discussed.
Because they can't. Let's start with that basic reality, okay? North Korea has developed nuclear bombs. We know that. North Korea has miniaturized a nuclear weapon. We don't know if it works. We don't know what its yield is. We don't know that it's actually going to function. North Korea has developed a couple of different types of missiles that they have fired randomly into the ocean. Okay? We don't know what the targeting capabilities of those things are. It may be that North Korea aims that at, say, Alaska. And midway in its flight path, the missile turns around and lands back on Pyongyang. Or goes wildly off course and lands somewhere in the Arctic. Lands in the Bering Sea. And even if the missile makes it to its target, which seems very unlikely, There's no guarantee that the warhead goes off.
But would you agree that with our national intelligence, we've almost not downplayed what the capabilities of North Korea are, but we haven't explored them enough? I mean, we're talking about a country, as we know, that is completely cut off from the entire world, but we have the capabilities of understanding what they have for arsenal. And I think we've, in my opinion, I think we downplayed it.
No less a source than the Pentagon itself said that we underestimated North Korea's capabilities in this area yesterday. And they said that that was a mistake. We've underestimated North Korea. We've underestimated what they can do.
But do you also believe, though, it's increased its capability?
At the same time.
At very, very quickly speed?
At the same time. No. They've moved along the path about as briskly as anybody is going to.
Okay.
Most of these plans you can find on the internet these days. And what you can't find, you can steal. We also, as I've pointed out in the past, have zero visibility in North Korea. We don't have intelligence assets on the ground over there because they're very good at keeping us away. None of this means... Now, you brought up the question about the weapon. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that North Korea reliably could do, that we know they could do, is put a nuclear bomb in a van, drive it over the border into South Korea, and set it off. We don't know that any of their missiles would ever come within 100 miles of a target. We don't know what they'd target. We know that accidentally they may hit Japan. Accidentally they may hit South Korea. Accidentally they may hit Guam. If they could even if they could even get the targeting right to hit Guam.
That's what I was just going to say to you. I mean, so many times we've been hearing that they can hit the United States. Well, in the past 24 hours, the big news has been Guam.
The consequences.
And if anybody knows, Guam is the United States territory. It is located very close to North Korea. And with the noise that is coming out of Washington, especially from Donald Trump, North Korea has said or has put Guam on its target.
Yeah.
Which has caused everybody in the small, 14 miles across and as long as
length. Here's what I want you to do. Fill your sink with water. Okay, just to illustrate this problem. Fill your kitchen sink with water, throw a cork into it, okay? That cork is Guam. Now I want you to stand across your kitchen and heave popcorn at it and see how many times you can hit it. And the reality is, you're probably not going to hit it at all. You might get in the vicinity, you might get lucky and hit it once or twice, but every single time you throw a piece of popcorn, it behaves differently because the shape of the popcorn is different. Every time you fire a missile, the atmospheric conditions are different. There is a lot that goes into getting a missile onto a target. And Guam is not the kind of target that amateurs with missiles are going to try and hit. It's nonsense. They can threaten Guam all day long. I don't think anybody in Washington sincerely believes they could hit it outside of an accident.
That would be a pretty bad accident.
Yeah. And the reality is nobody wants that. But the other side of this, because I'm starting to see all the nuclear hackles go up here in the United States. People are writing articles about what to do in case of a nuclear explosion and where you should run and hide and all the rest of this. Folks, there's no nuclear war coming. There is no nuclear war coming. The second that North Korea... Well, there may be nuclear war coming in North Korea. We'll say that. The second that North Korea launches...
It's done.
...an
it's
atomic gone. Bomb that detonates anywhere in the atmosphere, in the ocean, Pyongyang is going to be turned into 4 inches of glass in a matter of seconds. The United States is fully committed to that. And the only reason we haven't done it is because if their early warning systems see our missiles incoming, they might shoot some stuff at Japan and South Korea and who knows who else.
No, we've said that before. We are not. It's very unlikely that the United States is going to act without them acting first. It's kind of on the sense we're playing defense to a point, but I think we're winning more favorability in the offense part.
You want to know how you can tell there's going to be no war with North Korea? There has been no recall of our diplomats. No recall of American citizens who are in North Korea. If we thought War was a possibility. We're getting all Americans out of there.
We have diplomats in North Korea.
We have diplomats stationed on the border.
On the line.
Between North and South Korea. Yeah. Yes, we don't have any within North Korea itself, but we have diplomats and military stationed on the border. If the United States were to pack up and leave that border post, that would be a clear sign that things are about to go off the rails. So until that happens, you can sleep at night. You can relax.
Now, if we look at on the other side, we're talking about an actual attack going back and forth. What if the United States plays a strategy of kind of leaning back a little bit and letting this slow roll play out? Where do you think that there could be an internal regime change?
No.
In North Korea?
No.
You don't think that the atmosphere or environment in North Korea is adjusting a little bit?
No. No, because as long as Kim Jong-un is over there executing anyone who disagrees with him, he's fine. The generals aren't going to rise up. The military is the power in North Korea.
No, of course.
The North Korean...
I mean, if the actual people tried to rise up, it would never happen.
It would be a massacre. The people have no guns. The people have no weapons. The people have no food. They're starving to death. The people who do have those things are the elites who benefit from the society and don't care. So any kind of an uprising in North Korea is going to be put down in a matter of minutes with a ridiculously high body count. The military is the power in North Korea. And as long as Kim Jong-un holds the favor of the military, which he holds by letting them do whatever the heck they want to do, and a lot of international posturing, he's good. He would have to turn around and say, you know what? No, I'm shutting down the military. Don't want war with anybody. Let's all go have a good time. And then they're going to put one in the back of his head and put some general in charge who's going to be every bit as bad as Kim Jong-un is.
Now, within the past, I don't know, 48, 72 hours, what is the voices coming out of China right now? I haven't heard much.
China's told everyone to calm down. Russia's told everyone to calm down. North Korea itself had this to say. Ri Chun-wei, ladies and gentlemen, Ri Chun-wei with the official North Korean statement.
Our big picture correspondent.
Yes,
we love
Ri Chun-wei.
See, we are extremely lucky because we actually have a correspondent over there.
They should get her on the CBS Evening News.
Mm-hmm.
They got rid of Scott Pelley. Great. Like, get Ri in there. Ri is going to blow David Muir out of the water. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, today in sports news, we learned the NHL will not be going for gold. Not only will Sidney Crosby, Connor McDavid, Matthews, and the most celebrated hockey players in the world will not be going to the Olympics, neither will anybody with an NHL contract. The league has decided that players with active NHL contracts, even those in the minors, will not be allowed to participate in the Olympics next February in South Korea. Deputy Commissioner Bill Daley confirmed the league's stance to the Associated Press on Monday. The league announced in April that it wouldn't be stopping its season to go to the Olympics for the first time since 1994. But questions had remained about players in the American Hockey League and the ECHL. Quote, a decision has finally been made that all players under NHL contract will be subject to similar treatment. This, Daley said, this means players signed two-way NHL contracts or who are loaned to minor league affiliates by their clubs will not be available to skate for the United States, Canada, or any other national team. The AHL said earlier this summer that general managers could decide to allow players on AHL contracts to play in South Korea. Daley confirmed that players signed to NHL deals who were playing in Europe, like Dallas Stars first-round pick Miro Heiskanen, Gudjonsson, who were expected to spend the season in Finland, who would not be precluded from playing in the Olympics. Those players loaned to European teams wouldn't be playing in the season on their NHL contracts, which is the same situation for those on entry-level deals in the Canadian Junior Leagues.
So
interesting.
So when Putin calls Alex Ovechkin and says, hey, I want you on the national team, Alex Ovechkin is going to sit there and say, yet? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. The NHL stands. Is setting itself up for a nightmare with this thing. Because one of the things that those players have talked about in the last several Olympics is, as much as they love playing in the NHL, what a huge honor it is to be on the national team. And all of the best hockey players in any given country are in the NHL. We know this. The NHL is a magnet for the best hockey players on the planet. NHL pay is better than European hockey pay, so they all come over here. You're going to tell me these guys aren't going to play? You're going to tell me Sidney Crosby isn't going to go play for Team Canada? Mm-hmm. Come on.
But I mean, this also shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, since the league has been threatening this for months. So in April, we did find out. Now, this, maybe I'm completely old school and I'm in this crazy sports mindset, but from what I understand with Olympics and in how I grew up, it's you watched all these local heroes, all these kids that, you know, maybe made it to the minors, maybe got these contracts, but still were capable of skating or playing any sport.
They had to be amateurs. They were college kids, mostly.
Exactly.
Like, everybody talks about the Miracle on Ice.
Half of those kids were from high school and college out of Minnesota.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, we had people from the Boston area.
There were some from BC. There were some from BU. There were a bunch from Minnesota. And it was like, they were college hockey players. And that's what we had been sending to the Olympics up to that point. Well, a few years after that, they got the idea that, you know what, if we're trying to put the best athletes in the world and in the Olympics,
America likes to win.
But it wasn't just America, because if it had just been the United States coming out and saying this, every other country in the world would have been like, no, you're not doing that.
No, of course. But I'm going to, 90% of, it's probably higher, but almost all of the athletes that participate in the Olympics are paid professional athletes.
Almost all the athletes that participate in the Olympics are not paid professional athletes. They are amateur athletes. Basketball, hockey are among the exceptions to that rule.
No, it's hard because, yes, there's no professional track and field league like the United States, you know, in the United States, but they're professional athletes. They're paid, they're sponsored.
Their job is to be an athlete, but they are not pro athletes in the sense that we define pro athletes.
Well, maybe you're...
You get paid $5 million a year to play football.
Well, no, maybe your reasoning or explanation of a pro athlete is different from mine, but it's not somebody that just fits in hockey league, baseball, football, basketball, soccer.
The Olympic rules prohibit professional athletes. That is in the charter of the Olympic Games.
Exactly.
Professional athletes are prohibited.
How they define it. But somebody that
trains... How they define it is the same way that any rational person would define it. Professional athletes are banned from the Olympic Games with certain exceptions. Namely, basketball and hockey.
I understand
that. Those are the
that.
Two big ones.
I understand that because
and the
there,
reason
are,
they did it,
there are professional, air quote, professional leagues because of that. There is no, as I said, there's no professional track and field
correct.
League.
There's no professional there's judo league. Going, there's no professional marathon league.
I know, but
league.
These are professional athletes in the sense of this is their profession. This is what they do every day. This is actually what they get paid millions of dollars
that's fine.
For.
The rule used to be, and that's always been the case.
So again, that's your definition of professional may be different from mine.
It's or not, no. Because
in the American version
in the old days, okay, with regard to sports like hockey and basketball, where there were professional leagues where you could go and get paid as a professional to be an athlete in those leagues, you were barred from competing in the Olympics. Mm-hmm. And the same is true of everything else. There used to be a professional tennis league. And you couldn't compete in Wimbledon or any of those things if you were in the tennis league.
If we are talking about one of the top-ranked gymnasts, she's a professional athlete.
Right. But we don't...
But this is what I'm saying. This is what the difference between you and I are. That you are completely organizing what you consider a professional athlete.
I am telling you
what... And I understand you're going by the Webster dictionary definition or the IOC.
Talking over me does not make your point more valid.
But...
I am telling you.
Different opinion.
It's not a difference of opinion. The Olympic Charter defines what a professional athlete is and says if you are a part of an organized professional league, you cannot take part in the Olympics. That's the rule.
Yes, I
understand
that.
It's not a difference of opinion.
No.
If you want to argue semantics and say that if you spend all of your time training and working out and competing and you have sponsorships and the U.S. Olympic Committee is paying your living expenses, then you're a professional athlete, fine.
No, exactly. That's what I just said.
That's not how the Olympics defines a professional athlete. So,
Let's
take this back to the question of pro athletes. As they are defined by the Olympic Committee and not any of this other stuff.
Derek, I completely understand.
NHL, NBA, MLB, European leagues, FIFA, any of these.
In a league.
They were never allowed to compete until the early 90s when they realized that if you put NBA players in the Summer Olympics...
Of course, you're going to sell tickets.
You were going to make... It wasn't just that you were going to sell tickets. You were going to make piles of money on the television mm-hmm. rights because nobody watched the Summer Olympics. And still, nobody watches. You know what people watch in the Summer Olympics? They watch beach volleyball and they watch basketball. That's it.
No, and I think we're getting off on different places. But what I consider all of these people to be professional athletes. Yes, they are.
Forget about that.
But I understand. I understand what is written in the clause for the Olympics and what they say is actually a professional athlete. I'm just saying.
Stay on point.
Nope.
Please stay on point. I'm begging you. This NBA.
I get it.
NHL. I don't want to talk about anything else.
Done.
Nothing else. Keep it in this box. NBA, NHL.
That I agree with. They are in a league. These are professional athletes.
The NHL is not going to keep those players from going to the Olympics. There is no way that it happens.
Of course, and as I said, this comes as no surprise. We're talking about for the past several years, the Olympics, the NHL has continued its involvement and has been very contentious, and there's very little financial benefits.
One second.
Very little financial benefits to any of the owners. And basically, what they're doing is they're letting their players go for 2 weeks without... Or being able to get injured.
All right, we got a caller who hopefully is on my side and tired of listening to Lisa. caller, what's just your first name?
Stephen Somerville.
Stephen Somerville, what's your take on who's a pro athlete? I don't disagree with Lisa, by the way, that if your whole life is being an athlete, that's your career. But there's a difference between that and getting $20 million a year from the NFL. Yes.
Here's the thing. Let's say Nike pays the NFL, and then the NFL distributes to the teams, and then the teams pay the athlete. What's the difference with a professional athlete if the professional athlete simply gets the sponsorship directly from Nike, which is what we're seeing with a lot of these athletes? Like, you know, Usain Bolt made millions directly from Nike. He wasn't a professional. He competed in 4 Olympics. But by your definition, he's not a professional. By a reasonable man acting prudently, we would look at this and say, he's a professional. Just because there's no middleman, he's mm-hmm. not a professional?
I agree.
That doesn't make sense.
And I don't disagree with that point. The what I'm trying to bring it down to is how the Olympics defines what a professional athlete is.
They do, in an organized league.
And the problem with that, is the Olympics defined Jim Thorpe as a professional because one day one guy paid him to play baseball in a farm league.
Correct.
Instead of going to his job. That is ludicrous, and therefore I can't agree with your definition or the Olympics definition, as narrow and as obtuse as it is, because it only fits their definition so that many countries that do not have formal organizations can send whoever the hell they want for years. Obviously, it's changed recently. But that's it. That's all it was there for. It was a loophole. And so just because there's no middleman, you're not a professional? I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous.
I don't disagree with it. And the point that you bring up about Jim Thorpe is a good one, because that was a deliberate attempt by the Olympic Committee to exclude one of the world's top athletes because they didn't want him competing. It was really what that came down to. And they dug deep to find that one.
Of course they did, but again, it's because their rules were obtuse. So I cannot, I mean, if you want to discuss what is and isn't professional, that's great. But if you're using the standard of the Olympic Committee and the Olympic definition, which quite literally changes from day to day,
I agree, because if we're talking in sense of the NFL, there are players that are making, what, $280,000 compared to your players that are making $13 million a year, whereas some people on the, you know, as he used an example of Usain Bolt, makes how many millions of dollars?
Yeah, Usain Bolt made more money than three quarters of the guys in the NFL last year.
So it's interesting, though, that the IOC is excluding only organized sports, understanding that these star players are making upwards of, you know, a couple $100 million in their career.
All right, so I am on board. I will agree. I don't disagree that the definition is stupid. I have to go with what the Olympics defines as a professional athlete. And we could spend all night talking about the various things the Olympic Committee has done that are suspect or stupid or to the benefit of some individual.
They seriously considered Boston. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, exactly.
If this was a court of law and I had to discredit your source material that you are standing upon, I would simply state that for almost a year they considered Boston as a viable city for Summer Olympics.
Hey, come on. That's my case. We were going to have beach volleyball in the public garden. Tell me that wasn't a great idea.
I just wanted kayaking on the trail. Great.
Yeah, if you thought Pooh Bay down there in Brazil was bad, you ain't seen nothing yet. Steve, thank you for your call.
Thank you. You know, but the NHL stepping away from the Olympic competition, it's plain and simple, comes down to pros and cons, and this time the cons outweighed, and they came out on top. But
here's what's going to happen for those 2 weeks in February. They're either going to be canceling games because there aren't enough guys coming to play, mm-hmm. or you're going to see a lot of minor league hockey players showing up on the ice because all the stars have gone over to Seoul, South Korea.
No, but for now, you have all the owners resting easy about the security of their multi-million dollar assets.
Vladimir Putin has a nuclear arsenal and a desire to have Alexander Ovechkin on the national team.
It's happening.
I'm not messing with Putin.
Well, today in entertainment news, those emails, Derek, you asked for, well, we got them. The hacker group that took credit for breaking into HBO's computer systems reportedly released new documents Monday, including marketing materials, emails from executives, addresses of Game of Thrones actors, and more spoilers from the hit TV show.
Wait. Have you got Emilia Clarke's address?
Maybe.
I need that.
I have the phone number.
Really?
Text
that to me.
The premium paid TV channel owned by media company Time Warner reiterated late Monday that it does not think that the company's entire email system was breached. Oh no, they haven't. Quote, the forensic review is ongoing. The review to date has not given us a reason to believe that our email system as a whole has been compromised, HBO said in a statement. The Hollywood Reporter and other publications earlier Monday reported that marketing materials related to Game of Thrones drama series and emails from HBO vice president covering a six-month period were posted online. The hackers, in an online disclosure, noted that they took 6 months to infiltrate the system. Hackers reportedly leaked a preliminary outline in the upcoming fifth episode of the current Game of Thrones season, similar to the first batch stolen material of the outline of episode 4. The document seems to be prepared more than a year ago, according to a screenshot on the website Torrent Freak.
Can we get back to Amelia Clark's phone number and its importance in my life?
So we knew this was coming. We talked about it last week in Did You Hear?
I'm bored. Can I tell you why I'm bored? I haven't seen any juicy gossip that is going to destroy people's reputations.
But again, we're one week out?
Or people... But you've got all these emails.
But this is what you have. You have a group of hackers that is playing this really nice game of, I'm not going to do anything too crazy.
You're not going to get the money.
Here's a little. Yeah. Give me the money. So they're living in this fantasy bubble that they're actually going to get the money from HBO.
You know why?
Maybe a couple more weeks.
Because they're not ticked off. Yeah. They're not ticked off like North Korea was when it hacked Sony. That's why. But here's the thing, hackers. If you're gonna get this stuff, we want the gossip.
At least hack into HBO because the next season of Game of Thrones is gonna only be.
Nobody cares that you're dumping some low res version of Game of Thrones on the Pirate Bay. Okay, no one cares. Give us the dirt. Give us the uncouth, unpolitically correct things that all these HBO executives say behind closed doors so that we can expose them for the hypocrites that they are. That's what we want. Stop giving us scripts. Stop giving us episodes of shows that haven't aired yet that nobody wants to watch in the first place.
But to the network, that's what's important.
No, it's not. No matter what happens, okay, HBO, if you are an HBO subscriber, HBO has your money. They don't care if you watch Game of Thrones this coming Sunday or if you watch the rest of the season
in
320 pixel resolution on your cell phone on the dark web. They got your money either way. They're going to sell their DVDs. They're going to sell their ancillary merchandise. They're going to keep licensing things. None of this matters. What they are afraid of and what they rightfully should be afraid of is that we're going to find out how the sausage gets made when the juicy contents of the emails are distributed through WikiLeaks.
But you really think that they...
By a fired Google engineer who wrote an anti-diversity screed.
You really think that they believe that their emails are that bad? This is what it's... Look at the...
Oh, come on.
But look at the Clinton Foundation and the whole entire Clinton group thought none of their emails were bad. We're trying to...
We've had two massive high-profile breaches. Sony, which ruined everybody's careers, and Hillary Clinton and John Podesta, which ruined Hillary Clinton's shot at the White House. Okay? You're going to tell me...
But in their fantasy brain, they don't think that they're doing anything wrong. They don't think that the conversation is going back and forth.
No, they think no one's ever going to see it. That's what they think.
That I agree with.
They think no one's ever going to see it. And that's where these hackers are missing the boat. Mm-hmm. Okay? I get it. I get why they're holding out. Because they're trying to blackmail them into paying up millions of dollars. And HBO is not going to give you the millions of dollars. I'll tell you that right now. Won't happen. The FBI is involved. The FBI will not let them give you the millions of dollars. So, release what you got while you can before the pre-dawn raid on your home, where both your servers and yourself are impounded for the foreseeable future, and let the rest of the world understand what we're dealing with. I was so excited. I saw the headline yesterday. It's like hackers release more. And it's like, I don't want Game of Thrones. Forget it. Stupid.
It's just because you don't watch it.
I watch it.
Do you really?
I've seen...
Wait, two episodes?
No, I've seen almost every episode of Game of Thrones. I don't like it.
It's so strange.
It's not that good.
It's really good.
No, it's not. It is wildly derivative of a dozen other things. I know how it ends.
You do?
Yes.
That's impossible.
I know how it ends.
Well, I would love to write that down on a piece
because
of paper. Keep it until the end of the series, and then we'll talk.
Anybody who's ever finished my first fiction, a child's first book of fiction, it's called My First Fiction, can see where this story is going.
I don't know.
Yeah. can absolutely
stop
see
breaking
where this
my Game of
story
Thrones
is going.
Dreams.
So I'll tell you the I've offered to tell you how it's going to end, and you've told me you don't want to hear it.
Nope.
So we'll leave it at that. Maybe the listeners don't want to hear that either. When the ending happens, I will gladly sit down and say, I told you so. Mm-hmm. And in fact,
you won't because you're not telling me.
In fact, I will write it up and I will date it and I'll have it in an email with the date on it. And after the last episode airs, we'll pull it out on the air and we'll see how correct I am.
Deal.
Technology news. Mazda Motor Corporation, with a research budget that is tiny compared with its competitors, has succeeded where GM, Daimler, and others have failed. The company announced that it has developed the first compression internal combustion engine, which ignites gasoline by subjecting it to intense pressure rather than lighting it with a spark plug. The technology improves efficiency by 20 to 30% and significantly reduces emissions, making the engines comparable to diesel but without the added pollution. Tests and vehicles still need to take place before the engine is ready for the mass market, but Mazda is betting heavily on the technology as others in the auto industry shift toward electric vehicles.
So essentially, Mazda has created diesel without the diesel.
It's not, no, because there's, okay, here we go. This is where we have to get all engineering and science-y. In a typical internal combustion engine, like the one you probably have in your car, a spark plug is used to generate a little bit of fire that ignites gasoline, which is in an ideal air-fuel mixture and under some compression. That drives the piston, drives the drive shaft, goes to the transmission, drives the wheels. So you're basically using electric ignition to create the spark and the explosion. In a diesel engine, the heat from the engine, rather than a spark plug, is what causes that explosion.
Mm-hmm.
So that the gasoline and the fuel air mixture can do what it does. In this engine, there is no heat. There is no spark plug. Apparently, these engines do have spark plugs in them for cold temperatures. Until the engine gets up to speed, it can't generate the pressure it needs. It just compresses the air-fuel mixture until, boom, you get the spark, and then your piston moves again.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to believe that they're doing this with the piston exerting pressure on the air-fuel mixture, and that's what sets the spark off.
Hmm.
So because there is no heat, because there is no spark, because there is no fire, more of the energy gets transferred into the engine. You improve fuel efficiency. You reduce emissions. Mazda may be onto something here. I don't know that this is necessarily going to be a passenger vehicle technology, because one of the things that Mazda said in announcing this was that there will always be a need for the internal combustion engine. And that statement reeks very heavily of, we're going to continue to have trains, long-distance trains that are impractical to electrify. We're going to have trucks. We're going to have boats. We're going to have all kinds of things that need a combustion engine to operate where electricity is not an option because you can't get enough batteries on board to get the distance you need.
Mm-hmm.
So that seems to be where they're going with this. And there may be some passenger cars involved in this. Mazda makes, you don't see them quite as much in the United States as you do overseas, but Mazda makes a lot of trucks. Not as known for that here, but they're a truck maker as well as a car maker, and this is something that could go into
small trucks.
They make big ones, too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It's just in the United States, you're going to see Peterbilts, you're going to see Internationals. We invented the semi, and we have got the big market for semis.
Yeah.
But if you go overseas, you do find locally made semis. So, interesting to see where that goes. It is WMFO Medford. I need to say that.
They like when you do.
Yeah, the FCC likes that. And good God, with Donald Trump in the White House, I do not want to take my chances on doing anything that would appear to be disloyal. Right? That's what it is. It's about the disloyalty. And I don't even know which one of these things I'm supposed to press.
No one. There's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
Near 5-day Boston forecast. You like summer?
Since
You're gonna like the next. You're gonna like the next 5 days. Tonight it's gonna be partly cloudy. Lows in the mid 60s in the city. Look for some 50s out in those crisper suburbs. Tomorrow mostly sunny day. High of about 80 degrees. Lows in the mid 60s and again upper 50s in the cold suburbs tomorrow night. The humidity starts to grow through the night on Thursday and Friday. Under partly sunny skies, we'll hit about 80 degrees, lows in the mid-60s, and even more humid on Saturday. Showers in the morning, showers in the afternoon, but some nice sunny, partly cloudy skies in between that, should you want to go out. Chance of rain, 40%.